Accession number 13359, Mr. George Richardson, reel 11.
Mr. G.S. Richardson, Reel 11. On what date did you leave Iraq, Mr. Richardson?
It was there towards the end of the first week, probably around about February the 6th. We got onto our wagons. There was no route march back the way we had gone from Kirkuk. We're all told to get back, and we moved across the desert, more or less following the same line, but instead of stopping 2 or 3 days at Kirkuk, we're more or less just stopping overnight to replenish supplies, replenish the trucks with water and fuel, and then moving on. I think we'll do it in probably 7 or 8 days going back, whereas it's taken us over a fortnight to go up.
It was much the same routine.
But much the same routine along the pipeline, Kirkuk to Haifa pipeline, but instead of going back to Haifa and those lines, we cut across to a railhead on the desert, the other side of Haifa. No, it's that desert, the Saudi desert, isn't it?
Sinai.
Sinai, yes, that's right. And then we entrained. We entrained from there, and it took us more or less in cattle wagon conditions back to the Nile Delta. We crossed over the Suez Canal by barges back to Ismailia. We got into open coaches with wooden seats. That was air conditioning, no windows. And the train set off up the Western Desert. We carried on across a few hundred miles. We stopped occasionally, and had rations brought up, and we headed towards Tripoli. And I think we've got the railhead, I think we'll be about 5 miles short of Tripoli, somewhere like that. Can't remember. Yes, we went up and then trained. I thought it was Tripoli at first, no, but it is Tobruk. But we're a few miles short and we didn't go into Tobruk itself.
You were going to where we're
up in Libya. We'd crossed over the Egyptian border up towards Hellfire Pass, and we'd gone up into Tripoli itself. The terrain was entirely different up there to where it had been across the Western Desert. It was winter time, so it was green, not through the day, but at night time, surprising how much greener came out during the night and then disappeared during the day. Quite a lot of sweet-smelling flowers. Found out there were sweet-scented stock that used to flower during the night and throw the perfume out. I was surprised. We travelled by wagon from the railhead across this windy desert terrain and finished up in what was to be the Gazala Line. Previous actions had made a Gazala Line, and we were formed into brigade boxes. Each battalion had its own enclosure next to the 8th and the 9th battalion, and the other brigades were further along up the line. I think we were the furthest point right of the 50th Division stand, to the right of us were, I think it was the 2nd South African Division, over to the sea. To the right-hand end of the Gazala line, the Free French had Bur Hakeim. Our lines were surrounded by barbed wire. To go out of the rear, you had to go through minefields. To the front, you had to go through minefields, left and right. All throughout each brigade area surrounded by minefields. The patrols had to go out for listening or any other reason to go out. Had to go through a marked road. And we went out through and we had listening posts, which we had to man 24 hours and then relayed.
When you were coming up through the Western Desert, had you been told that you were now going into a war situation?
Yes.
They warned you about this?
Yes, we were told.
How did you feel about that?
Well, we thought it was about time that we did something towards getting on with the war. I don't know how the rest of the troops thought, but I thought, well, okay, we have it to face, that's what we've been training for.
Did this give you feelings of excitement or dread?
There hadn't any excitement up to then, because nothing had been, just the terrible windstorms that we've had and the heat that we had to face up to. All our food was covered in sand. Every time we filled our mugs up, the sand would just pour a layer of sand over the top of the tea.
Did you feel confident and trained, ready to fight an enemy?
Well, yes, compared to what we'd been in the past. I think we had been doing a lot of training. We were better armed, and we thought we were well enough armed against the Germans, but we didn't expect many Germans to be in front of us, because being mostly Italian army that had been facing the 8th Army. It wasn't the 8th Army then anyhow. It was just a corps of troops, 30 corps.
You've mentioned that the box was in effect a sealed, static situation.
Yes.
In the box was the battalion of troops, of course. Had you any other arms in the box with you?
Yes. All our brigade had the brigade artillery, but they were behind our lines themselves. The routes run by the Royal Corps of Signals in and out were used quite often. The divisional general used to come into our box and up to the brigade headquarters or battalion headquarters to have a look at things. We were dug in, usually two or three men to each little dugout, dug down in the sand 4 or 5 feet with our little two-man bivouacs over the top to shelter us from the sun during the day and the sandstorms when they were blowing. We used to heat those at night by getting some petrol from the empty and pouring them into empty can. We'd fill an empty bean can up with sand, pour petrol over the top, put a string down through the sand, we'll light the string, and that will give us illumination for quite a long time. It's surprising how long the petrol candles would last like that. There was one or two proper candles that we could get, but very few and far between. Those were the candles that we had. Our water was very limited, but at the time, I think we ran about a gallon of water per man a day then.
And what did you do with the water?
Well, that had to be a man. Half of that went to the cookhouse and the other half went to our personal use. Our water bottle had to be filled every morning, and the rest of it was taken in tea. so everybody was rushing to, I think it was a pint of tea in the break three times a day, or 2 pints of water, and the rest of the water had to go for cooking vegetables.
How did you keep clean? Was there sufficient water to do this?
No. There was no means of bathing. I never heard of anybody being lousy, because I don't think it was a fit place for lice or anything like that to live in. I remember I got used to shaving every morning, drinking about 2/3 of my morning pint pot of tea. The remainder of my tea, I would dip my shaving brush in, swirl it round the round my face, rub my shaving soap round, and shave with the tea. And that was the only way we could have a hot shave in the morning, a hot tea, because no other way.
Did you get any opportunity at all to bath?
I think while we were in that static position, I think we were taken back maybe twice, back out of the line to just behind the lines where they had some mobile latrines and sprays set up by divisional headquarters. I think they used to change our blankets for us. Probably the colour sergeant would say, "Oh, everybody, roll your blankets up into bundles of 10. They would give us another bundle of 10 to replace them, take those bundles of 10 away to be fumigated. But that didn't happen very often. The only time we had listening posts out front, as far as I could ascertain, there was about 15 miles, sometimes more, between our lines and enemy lines. We had whole platoons going out at night into dug-in positions. We would lay, the single line would be already laid out, or if they wanted to change, we would have to change the position, laying another rail of cable further along and digging in, and then they would lie low all day, just listening and reporting back to battalion headquarters.
This would be by field telephone?
By field telephone.
And was the signaller with the
listening signaller post? I often did forward listening post.
How were you prepared for that? Were you, did the officer or someone tell you where you were going, what were you doing?
Oh no, they would tell us that we were going out with this platoon, we would report at the box at the entrance, and of course they would be inspected by the duty officer. The officer that was going out with us, the platoon officer that was going out with us, would be giving his orders, and our specific duty that we had to do, and we'd go out and take up our positions, dug in and just lie dug out all during the day, and then the next night at the same time we'll be relayed by another platoon.
Did you march out, or did you go by
truck? Oh no, we went out as a fighting unit in Spread Eagle lines, as silent as we could. We had to go through our main field on marked roads and then take our positions.
How far might you travel out?
Out about a mile in front of our lines, in front of our forward box.
So what was the role? What were you actually listening for?
Just enemy patrols. And we often, while I was on listen post, we never contacted anyway, but there's one or two did, and there was often short scuffles. One or two would get killed over here and brought one or two prisoners back.
Dug in during the day, for the whole of the day you're there, in the heat of the day, was that a particularly comfortable
situation? No, very uncomfortable, because for one thing, it was very hard desert, and our slit trenches were, that's about all there were. They weren't very deep. And we're lying there, and all we had was our water bottle and hard tack biscuits that we'd taken with us. We didn't have any rations brought out. That was 24 hours. I think we took a tin of bully beef, a packet of hard tack biscuits, and our water bottles. That had to do for 24 hours while we're there.
By this time, were you really acclimatised to the heat of the day?
Oh, yes. We'd spent quite a lot of time both in Iraq, before that, Cyprus, and then crossing the desert, and so we were. And it was just early spring coming up, so the heat hadn't fully risen by then. During the static positions, we had one of the army officers, Jock Connell, I think call him, formed what he called Jock Columns. It would take probably two batteries of artillery, our mortar platoon, or some mortars out, about a company strong. And we'll go out, and Bofors guns. Some Bofors guns that we also had armour piercing shells. And we'll go out in these jock columns, swanning about in the desert, in front of the lines. And often there'll be Stokers or other German reconnaissance planes would come fly over. We'd all get down and take up firing positions ready, but unless the attackers were told not to make any noise, we wouldn't show their strength, because we were there for the, probably show that the Germans that were still active around. On one of these big columns, we came across about a company strong of Italians dug in. We surrounded them and attacked them, and I think it was over 100 Italian prisoners. We had some carriers go out on this Duffy, and Captain Cole went out on one of these columns and brought back an Italian tank. He was up on the gun turret, waving his flag as he came to our lines, and his one of his tank drivers, his Bren gun carry drivers, was driving the tank, and brought that into the lines. And later on, he got MC for that operation. But it was really giving the artillery something to think of in our attack, because we came back proud as punch. We had quite a lot of souvenirs. I remember I picked up an Italian torch that had a little hand generator. And I had it for quite a long while. I think it got pinched later on. It was a torch that just picked your hand buttons and forward, and it, quite a good light of it.
There were obviously columns that you went on.
Oh, yes. And there's full battalion columns that went on sometimes.
What was the role of yourself in a column?
Well, mostly to we weren't very good with wireless. For one thing, we weren't allowed to talk over the wireless on these columns, because the Germans couldn't listen in to us. So it was mostly go along and either signal between us with semaphore, or runners between departments
of the column.
Of the column, yes. Or if we had time, we'd probably run short lines out. We always took two or three field telephones and some cable out on a little pickup wagon that was attached to our signal platoon.
And this would be between the column commander and his other units?
And the other units that was in the column was advancing, and us running about. We also went out, I remember, with some cardboard tanks. I suppose you heard this one. Our Bren gun carriers were towing along some tanks made up of wood and canvas. Towing them around about, and we went out with this column, and we had orders to send wireless signals, any old rubbish, backwards and forwards. There was a German aircraft come over and dropped a wooden bomb. It said wooden bomb for wooden tanks. Have you not heard of that one? It's true. True. You're asking me whether that was in that lot. Wooden bones for wooden tongues. And so, and you know, what we're doing, who was trying to draw the Germans, you know, into action, because they've been static, and we knew that the Germans were building up, and they were.
Did you come under fire on any of these columns?
We were strafed once. We were strafed once with two or three Stukas that came over. But except for that Duffy work we did with the Italians were just firing in there, but they didn't know which way to fire because we'd surrounded them, and them all is just up hands, and you know, they'd already put a load of mortar and 25 pounders into them, and more or less they were ready to give up before we were ready to take them.
Coming out of enemy fire for the first time, has been struck by aircraft. Do you recall your initial feelings?
Oh, I mean, the hair used to stand up on the back of my neck every time I heard bombs coming down. Same as when I even heard our own artillery coming close. I always had a feeling of wrinkling down from the back of my head right down my back. That was always the feeling. I knew that I was getting a bit scared, but I don't know, scared of being killed, I suppose, but we knew what to do our job, and up till then we hadn't really been in any major action. That one action that we did up to then was, well, it was fantastic. It was talked about, and of course they give reports back on the BBC about all these prisoners, and, you know, we'd been done a major attack and all this. Well, it was, we'd just by accident come across a company of ITIs who buggers had been out there for the same reason that we were, just swanning about. And we just come across them during the night and took advantage of them.
What effect on morale have these columns?
Well, I think that it was something that gave us some action, a feeling of that we were doing something, although the Germans weren't doing anything to retaliate. And then it wasn't until one morning we woke up with hellish barrages going off all round. We knew that there was a big battle going on some miles to our rear. We knew that. We had some men come through from 150 Brigade that had escaped when the Germans had gone right through the 150 Brigade lines.
What time would this be?
Well, let's see. April? We're up there. I'm not quite sure the time here, but it was in the late spring, I think. And the Germans had cut through between Bir Hakeim and our 149 lines and taken out most of our 150. There was 150 East Yorks, West Howard, Green Howards. There was four of them found their way into our line. That how they got, and there very few got back out of that together now. The Germans had gone through, and that they were fighting our town formations back that became known as a Knightsbridge battle. On the Knightsbridge. We didn't know anything about that much, except for the rumpus that was going on behind us. We had no idea that we were being cut off. Then, one morning, we woke up, and the artillery were bombarding in front of us. All the 25 pounds around battalion quarters. We'd never had them that close before. And they were sending shell after shell after shell. They had listening posts, and observation posts out in front of our brigade lines. They must have done that during the night, because I didn't know anything about it. Woke up in the morning and stand to, and there they were. And then we knew we were in action. We knew that we were in the front line. We were getting bombarded back, but not a lot. The main fighting was still behind us. Our water rations were taken down to 4 pints a man. Lowest we ever had, 4 pints a man, and we were told that we were more or less surrounded. I think everybody was given the impression. I remember an officer, I think he was a second in command of a company. There was two pickup. He took me and a signaller, and him, a sergeant, I think there was about six of us altogether. He took us out in front of our lane, and we went to a place I'd never been before. We went out and we went round an escarpment, and we got round the back of this escarpment, and he made some notes on his map, and I had a wireless there, but I was told not to use it unless we were attacked. And I got round this escarpment, and I think that was the point where he'd been told to go to with Ricky, and we came back to our own lanes. I had no idea where it was, but apparently it was the route that we eventually took when we escaped the Gazala Lane. But I thought, well, because I think we must have travelled 5 miles or more out in front, and we knew that the lanes, instead of having 15, 20 miles between us, they had all closed in, and we only had a few miles between us and the enemy. But and our listening posts were only just in front of the wire, and there were more smaller listening posts rather than full platoons, and everybody was more or less stood there most of the time. We were expecting major action.
Were your duties increasing at this time?
Yes, well, we had quite a lot of action in our battalion headquarters, in our battalion signal lobbies. The RSM page used to be in our tent more often than anywhere else, because that was the hub of the battalion, and he could get messages coming in and get them, and even use himself as runner back to the commanding officer or the adjutant with messages that were coming direct from headquarters, from brigade headquarters, brigadier, or even the general. And he spent quite a lot of time in our single tent. He's a good bloke for being a regular army regimental sergeant major. Outside, when he was on parade and that, he was a real military man. But as a man to man, he was a real nice chap to talk to. I got real liking to RSM Page. And
did
of course, he knew us all by name.
Did the tension increase
as
they came?
At this time, all our troops were stood to, and we're just waiting and being attacked. And I think we did send one or two platoons out to probe forward in the entire lanes to see what was happening. But no major attack. And then on this Sunday, the whole of the brigade headquarters come into our lines, and we're told to pack everything up and we're going to advance, and we're going to break out. This was the word, break out and get out. And each platoon officer had been up for a talk with company commanders. Company commanders had already been briefed from commanding officer and brigadiers, and said at 8 o'clock at night we'll have to start moving out. And that was more or less dusk, you say.
How did this take you? You obviously knew now you were surrounded.
Mm.
What were your feelings at that stage?
Well,
knowing that you're going to have to fight your way out?
We knew that we were going to have to fight our way out, and we were really scared. And when the action came, apparently they, I don't know, I think it might have been the 9th battalion that went first, followed by us, the Mere Battalion, and the 9th Battalion came. They went out on foot. They went out with the Royal Engineers, taking up, making tracks through our own minefields for our columns to go out in full line, full brigade lines. I think it was the 9th Battalion. And when the 9th Battalion went out, they went out with some wagons loaded with fuel. And they set trucks on fire at each end of the minefield, the enemy minefield that they'd cleared. And then we were told to charge with our wagons. And we went through and we kept on. And everything that we had was firing. There was